Welcome to the scorching arena of valor and the crucible of courage. This is the Forged in the Fires podcast with Fireman Rob. Here in the inferno of life's greatest challenges, heroes are shaped and legends are born. Every episode is a torchlight of wisdom, casting a glow on the paths walked by those who've braved the flames and emerged stronger. In this furnace of fortitude, we'll explore tales of resilience, bravery, and the unyielding human spirit. Each guest brings their own spark of insight, lighting up the darkness and guiding us through the smoke of adversity. With Fireman Rob at the helm, prepared to delve into conversations that smolder with significance and stories that kindle the soul. It's not just a podcast, it's a beacon for all who seek to rise from the ashes and glow with purpose. So stoke the fires of your curiosity and ready your heart for tales of triumph and transformation. The flames are roaring. The stage is ablaze. Welcome to the Forged in the Fires podcast. Let the journey begin.
All right, welcome back to Forged in the Fires podcast. I'm your host, Fireman Rob. Today's guest is not a survivor, but a thriver. She wrote an amazing book called Grasping for Air, The Stranglehold of a Narcissistic Abuse. She is an amazing individual who has a message that we all need to hear. And at the same point, we all need to feel that strength that she has. Dana Diaz, thank you so much for joining me today.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. And thank you for introducing me as a thriver, because I have a little opinion about the verbiage we use in our self-talk, referring to ourselves. So that's amazing.
And it's so powerful, you know, that it's hard to like encompass full stories. And I think that's the biggest thing that I always struggle with on when you do podcasts or anything like that. It's like encompassing the full stories. But I want the people to know who you are today before we go back in time. Like, who is Dana Diaz today? What are you so proud of today?
You know, I'm just so proud that I could have been a victim. I could have, you know, stayed in that mindset. I mean, took me 40 some years to finally kind of wake up from that victim fog and realize, wait a second, I have the power in me. I had the power all along to release myself of these bounds that I thought held me to my situation and those circumstances. And and really, they were never there. They were hypothetical. They were and so just freeing myself, it was so amazing that everything that I had wished for, you know, and unfortunately, they were very simple things. You know, I didn't want to be a fairy princess or anything, you know, unusual, but, you know, these very realistic things that I envisioned for myself, you know, way back in childhood and in my college years, I have achieved every one of them in the last 3 years since releasing myself. So it just feels good to finally be, I guess, who I was always meant to be and who was always in me to begin with. I just am rediscovering all that and fulfilling it. And there's nothing more liberating than just being your authentic self.
And see, that's what I wanted to have people hear first, because that's so important that they hear not just the story that that you're going to tell me and the listeners about where you were, but it's so powerful for people to hear where you are now, because that's what this transition is. That's why you wrote the book. That's why you speak about it. Let's go back in time and tell people about what was it that you felt was holding you down? What was it that was holding you down to get to that point to start to move to being a thriver? What was the life like?
It wasn't happy. That was for sure. You know, to go all the way back, so it all makes sense, you know, I'll just give a little tidbit. You know, I was born to a teenage mother who didn't want me. I'm not sure she wanted any children, because I was born on her 17th birthday and she had her tubes tied immediately after my birth to make sure it wouldn't happen again. And I was treated like an accident. I was referred to as an accident. I was referred to as illegitimate. I was a bastard child. She just didn't want to have any attachment to me because I represented something that, you know, she was ashamed of. You know, back then there was a stigma to be an unwed teenage mother. It's not like these right. days where it's more acceptable. So, you know, I understand that, although I still hold her accountable for, you know, the mistreatment. But going into my childhood, you know, I was happy with my grandmas and my uncles, but always struggled with my mother. She just yeah. maintained a very, you know, detached sense with me. And then she married a man. I didn't know what a narcissist was back then. And I am not yeah. using that term loosely. He was textbook version of the overt narcissist, very grandiose, thought he was it. He was superior to everybody else. But the problem was he was very controlling and possessive. And my mother, being much younger and much more attractive, obviously he wanted to be with her for obvious reasons, but, you know, she submitted to him. I think she felt that he was her way out of, you know, the poorer circumstances she had grown up in. You know, with him, right. we had a house, we moved to the suburbs, we had, you know, she was able to drive a nice car and have nice things, and she wanted that life. Right. Unfortunately, you know, he wanted me much less than she had. You know, he started with the verbal abuse and then it creeped into physical abuse. You know, and there's always the question of which one's worse. And I guess it right. depends on the severity for everybody's unique situation. But for me, I could take being battered around and beaten and strangled and all these things that happened that were awful. But gosh, those words every day being told, you're a bother, you're a burden, I shouldn't have to pay for another man's child, nobody's ever going to love you, nobody wants you here, jeez. You're stupid, you're incompetent, you name it. And the actions followed. So I went into my adult life, needless to say, I'm feeling all of that worthlessness and undeservedness. And I immediately fell for somebody who, strangely, who reminded me of my stepfather, but who was the only person that was willing, I guess, you know, I hate to use
I was going to say, you're using that.
It was what it was.
Was it?
I was starving for somebody to love me. And he kind of loved me sometimes and he kind of hated me other times. So
I have to ask you, Dana, like at that point, was that love that you felt, was that just the only thing that you identified as love?
There's a lot there. I'm actually working on that book right now. I'm working on the revision.
I'm getting a spoiler here.
So you're getting a spoiler. You know, I think there was a lot of stuff going on. I think my mentality, I mean, we talk about mindset. I knew that all the things that had been, you know, this narrative that had been created about me, it felt wrong. It felt unjust. I knew I deserved better. But when you hear it every day and you hear it from the primary people in your life, you internalize it. So there right. was nothing that anybody could tell me to say that I deserved better. Or, you know, I had no confidence. I had no self-esteem. I literally thought I struggled with why I even existed. I mean, was I put here just to suffer? Because I didn't think anybody would ever love me. So it was just the combination of that with the fact that, you know, you repeat patterns in your life. And I yeah. think that there was something, I mean, it certainly wasn't comforting, but it was comfortable to be in a situation where I knew how to navigate the waters a little better than if I had been given a very nice boy that, you know, I wouldn't know what to do with being treated nicely and having doors open for me and being spoken to with kind words. I think I honestly felt and the clincher of this is a big spoiler. I'll give you this, is that my mother, when I had gone to her thinking I had to try to appeal to her about her husband's treatment of me, she would often tell me, well, the way he treats you is just, you know, he's, you know, mistreating you to the same extent as he loves you. Meaning if somebody loves you, they're going to treat you like crap. So I just had all this misinformation in my head that led me to think that this was okay. But like I said, there were these times, and I think anybody who's been in a relationship with a narcissist or any kind of toxic relationship, you could put whatever label you want on it, but there's always this push and pull. You know, there's those really bad times, like really bad, like I had crowbar swung at my head and the walls were punched. He took doors off hinges. Stuff went flying across the room when he'd have these angry outbursts. All these things happened. And yet when it was good, I mean, it was good. We would sit and watch a movie and be laughing, and he'd caress my cheek so gently. And, you know, I felt the affection and I felt the love. And he would even say, oh, we just have a passionate relationship, you know, meaning it's okay for me to mistreat you now and then, because when I love you hard. But like I said, the hate was pretty bad too. And the problem was that he kept pushing the boundaries of this unacceptable behavior just a little more every time. Like he knew he got what he got away with before. So every time he'd have another, you know, let's call it a tantrum to be nice, but you know, it would be just a little worse than the last time, so that it wasn't enough for me to walk out because I hadn't walked out before, but it was enough for me to know that I didn't like what was going on. And like, you know, let's talk about this, but we could never talk about it because it wasn't him. It was me. I had provoked him. I had said something to upset him. I had done something. I might have even just given him a look or the expression on my face, or maybe I had nothing to do with it whatsoever. And he was just angry at the world and took it out on me. But it was always, you know, not his fault, but mine. I suffered for everything he didn't want to take accountability for. But by the end, it just was draining.
So question for you on this and this. So how necessary is it for a narcissist to recognize their traits, or is it really all in the person who is the other person to manage it?
Person to manage it. You know, the thing about narcissists, you know, and I have to say, not all narcissists are bad. You know, there are some that just really think like their self-esteem is just ridiculously high. But shouldn't we all feel so good about ourselves? And usually they look as good as they think they do, so you really cannot hate on them. But the ones we're talking about here are the ones that, you know, manipulate, control. I mean, there's financial abuse, legal abuse, sexual abuse, physical, verbal, psychological. They use all these different tactics to control you. And the control is to keep you, because there is something that about you, I hate to use the word victim, but you are a victim in these situations. Right. The victim has some quality or some resource that the narcissist wants to keep. So I always say it's kind of like putting a bird in a cage, you know? Right. You're holding the bird in the cage. They, you know, whatever it is that they have, you want. So you don't let it out. And they literally do isolate you. They make it difficult for you to have relationships outside of the one you have with them, including with family and friends, even neighbors. I mean, it just became such a fight to even have a conversation on the phone with my grandma. I mean, it was just so, you know, over this 25-year, you know, time frame that we were together, it just got to the point where it was just easier and kept the peace for my sanity. And then our sons, after we had our son, to just be like, that's fine. Like, I just won't have friends. I won't go to anything with my family. I won't even talk to my family. Like, I'll just be here. And I literally felt like I was just like that obedient dog waiting for my next command, because everything was dictated to me. What I could wear, how I looked, how I did my hair, if I could wear lipstick or not, what I ate, you know, even working out. He didn't like me doing those kinds of workouts. Okay, I'll switch to yoga. Okay, well, I don't want you doing yoga, you know, on the floors. Why? What? It's so ridiculous. Okay, so I'll go running. Well, I don't like the path you're treading on the grass outside the property. I mean, it was always something, but they just don't want you. They just want to restrict anything that might give you some sense of yourself or some sense of joy or success or achievement. They want to minimize you and reduce you so they have full control over you. And unfortunately, you know, there's so many reasons in any relationship why anybody stays. But, you know, when you're married and you have a kid or multiple children, you have a house, it sounds nice to say, why didn't you leave? Why did you stay? Well, for all those reasons, you know, didn't build a life. You didn't get married to get divorced. You don't want to do that to your kids because of all these ideas about broken homes and broken families. And then you add in my faith. You know, I was born and raised Catholic, and, you know, people can have opinions about that. But the reality was my feeling was very strong that divorce was not an option. And, you know, it was all these things, but there was a breaking point. And the sad thing is, it wasn't when the crowbar was swung at my head. It wasn't the prescription medication situation where he drugged me on the floor into the bathroom, hoping I would die, but I woke up. It wasn't, you know, there was a knife situation, gun situation there. I mean, we ended up in straight up domestic violence, but it wasn't any of those things that made me leave. I mean, I'm laughing. Thank God I can laugh. You have about to laugh. Now, it's so ridiculous because it sounds ridiculous. I will even say it, and I'm talking about myself, but it was when I got sick. It was about 2 years before our divorce. I had been experiencing some random symptoms, but just weird things. Like my hands would just go numb for no reason. I was having blurry vision, blacking out a lot. I was getting fevers, but my heart rate would drop so low, like to the point where they were talking about stents. And I mean, I'm literally in my early 40s. I'm a cross country coach. I eat healthy. Like I'm not out of shape or unhealthy by any means. So, but in November of 2018, there was, you know, a situation. It wasn't unlike any of the other, you know, arguments or you know, situations we'd had in the past. It was much the same. But for some reason, I think that was just my mind or my body. One of them just said, that's it. We're done. And they threw in the towel because within 2 weeks after that situation, I had dropped 15 pounds. I was down to 93 pounds. I mean, you could see my bones and my muscles. It was scary, even to me. I scared people when I saw them because they were like, what is going on? Like, you're obviously ill. I couldn't breathe. I couldn't move. I couldn't even pick up like a dryer sheet or tear toilet paper off the roll. My hands just stopped working. I couldn't unlock my door to get in my house. It was just, it was really, to feel defeated is an understatement. So long and short of that, after a year of specialists and tests and everything else, I finally got with a neurologist who got me with Mayo Clinic. Mayo Clinic tested my cortisol levels. Cortisol is a stress hormone that's similar to adrenaline, runs through your body during times of high stress. Well, they did the test and they said, well, we're going to have to redo it because there's no way your cortisol levels are this high. Somebody must have compromised the sample. So let's redo it.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, we redid it. Nobody compromised any sample. My levels of cortisol were found to be roughly four times higher than the highest they should be at any given time. And it had caught, there was so much of it that had been going through my body for decades because of all this. They called it chronic stress. It was abuse.
Right.
All this chronic stress that it had actually caused my white blood cells to think that I had a cancer or a virus that needed to eradicate, but it was killing themselves off. So I ended up autoimmune. And then they diagnosed me with a rare lung syndrome that they said is like having COPD and fibromyalgia all at the same time, which is why my whole body was just in havoc. But the doctor sat me down. He said, nothing in your body is functioning. Like everything is at a minimal survival rate. So he's like, there's no pill, there's no surgery. If you don't change whatever it is causing you the stress, you might actually die. Like stress can kill you. And I guess I've heard that phrase, but I thought
never believed it.
Right. Yeah. Who really believes that? Honestly, you don't believe it. Well, I can tell you. It felt like death because, I mean, the doctors used to, I mean, we all were joking about, you know, I looked and felt like a 90-year-old inside my body. But, you know, that was the point where I'll never forget laying down that night. And, you know, I hadn't slept in the same bed as my former husband for a long time. I stayed in our basement on the couch, but I just laid there and I thought, gosh, you know, this isn't what I want. And then I thought to ask myself the most simple question that somebody could even think to ask, but nobody had ever asked me that. I said, what do I want? And I knew the answer right away. I mean, I went to college for journalism. I minored in psychology. I think 12 years old or so, I knew I wanted to help victims of abuse. I wanted to do something. Yeah. I wanted to write a book. I wanted to be a journalist or a reporter. I idolized Barbara Walters. Like there were all these things I wanted to do and I wanted to travel and I wanted, guess what? I wanted to be happy. I know it's so much to ask.
It's a lot to ask, right?
It is a lot to ask. And I even wanted to be married. I wanted a part. I mean, who doesn't want to be with somebody, to have that person, that best friend at the end of the day to come home to? I just knew that I couldn't have any of the things I wanted with the person I was with. So I think it was at that point that once I envisioned it, like I acknowledged, these are the things I've always wanted forever. And I saw it. I couldn't unsee it. So then I just basically gave myself permission and said, well, I'm not getting anywhere going, you know, at the rate I'm going and living this life. It wasn't even my life. It was the life I was told I was supposed to live by the person sleeping upstairs. So, you know, I just said to hell with this. You know, I don't think, you know, if God wants to strike me down because I'm not supposed to get a divorce, then so be it. I'm going to die anyway if I stay here.
Exactly.
So I was like, I'm going to just divorce this man. I'm going to move on with my life and let's see what happens. And, you know, we go back to when we started this conversation, where am I now? This was just 3 years ago. This is 2023. We got divorced in September of 2020 in the midst of COVID actually held it up. Otherwise, it would have been sooner, but I had to wait for the courts to reopen. But this is 3 years ago. In that 3 years, mind you, he, like I said, he had isolated us in a small town, 90 miles outside of Chicago, where I was born and raised and went to school and everything, away from my family. So I'm out in Podunk, USA, cleaning houses for a living because he set me up with this job cleaning houses with his friend's wife. So I'm scrubbing toilets on my hands and knees 3 years ago. You know where I am now? I have published a book. I have two more books being published next year. I'm not scrubbing toilets. Not like that's demeaning, but it's better for my health. And I haven't had to use my oxygen. I had a backpack oxygen machine 3 years ago. I don't even know the last time I used it because guess what? I'm a healthy weight and I don't have symptoms. And I'm remarried to a longtime friend who just kind of appeared out of nowhere when everything happened. And I was like, no, sir, that is the last thing I need. But you know what? he was respectful and patient, but persistent at the same time. And I gave it a shot. And you know what?
It was worth it.
We're very, very happy. And this is why I won't say that I'm a victim or that I'm broken or damaged, because do I have CPTSD? Yes. Have I had bouts of depression, anxiety? Who the hell wouldn't after living the life I lived? But you know what?
Right.
When you are around, now that I'm out of that negativity and that hostility, that terrible environment that I was in with my ex and then with my mother and stepfather before that, 4 decades of my life, now I'm around somebody, and I am picky about who I surround myself with now, but
I can understand that.
People who speak positivity, you know, they're encouraging, they're uplifting. And mind you, I'm not saying these are people who kiss my ass or are yes men. They are still people who will call me out and say, that's not who, don't be that way. That's not who you are, you know, or whatever it is, or you're better than that. But that's the thing about it. They are people who make me better. They think highly of me, probably more highly than I think of myself. You know, just like I used to always say, the people at church probably thought I was a better person than what I really was, because if they heard my thoughts, I need to keep going to church. But the thing is you want to be around people who make you better, not just as a person, but in the field that you're in. I was asked to speak in a summit last month, and I was like, who am I to speak in a summit for healing after trauma? And you know what? It wasn't the best, you know, presentation. I did my best, but I was nervous as heck. I mean, I was like sweating profusely. It was awful. But
what's
you know
your personal
what?
Story? That's hard.
It is, right? But the beauty of it, and this is what I want people to understand, is you don't have to be the best, and you don't have to, you just have to be you, because the people, the other presenters in that summit, I mean, one of them, she and I are, I'd like to say we're going to be very good friends. We have maintained contact constantly. She worked with Barbara Walters.
Oh, that's awesome.
She has headed up, you know, departments of Fox News, and she's been in the media and in the spotlight for a long time. And, you know, I met other people that all have their stories and are very well versed and, you know, but they didn't look down on me. They just kind of took me by the hand and pulled me up with them and said, come on, girl, let's do this. You're going to be okay. You know, we'll get through this and you'll get better and keep doing what you're doing. And those are the kind of people that you want to be around. You know, the people that make you better, the people that challenge you, the people that, you know, are going to turn whatever it is you want to do into a reality. And the thing about it is, if I can be scrubbing floors and toilets 3 years ago, and now I'm a full-time writer, and I've been on over 70 podcasts all around the world, like, who wants to hear what I have to say? Apparently a few people. So I don't want anybody to don't give anyone the power to diminish who you are and what you're capable of. Because I did it for 40 some years, and I could have just as easily stayed in that situation if I was even still alive at this point. And what a waste. What a waste of a life, you know?
Right. Is it now, question for you. Now, is it even possible to have a healthy relationship with a narcissist without damaging yourself from like a standpoint of a child or even a spouse like you were? Is that even possible?
You know what? I'm no doctor or therapist or,
but you have experiential knowledge.
I don't think so. The thing about narcissists, and again, I'm talking about what we call malignant narcissists, the ones that actually will use abusive tactics to gain whatever ego fulfillment they need from you. But, they really cannot see anything wrong with what they're doing, because again, they have no remorse. They have no empathy. I mean, you'd have to read my book, you know, if anyone's interested, but you know, one of the most telling stories in my book was when I had multiple miscarriages with him, but the one I was 10 feet away from him in the kitchen when it struck me, and I was begging him for help. I was begging him to call the doctor, call and take me to the emergency room. And he turned the television up. He turned the volume up so he didn't have to hear me cry. He wouldn't even look at me. He wouldn't acknowledge me. He didn't say a word. He just let me bleed all over the floor. It was
Wow.
Somebody like that is, I don't think is able.
That totally makes sense.
To be rehabilitated. Yeah. But, you know, it's like anything else. You have to want to be rehabilitated. Just like a victim in those circumstances, I could sit here and tell people all this stuff. And maybe, you know, there's a listener thinking, oh, I know somebody, I have a daughter in that situation, I have a niece, or, you know, it happens right. to men too. But the problem is, you can tell them, get out, you need to leave, and all this, they have to want to.
That's so
true. And a lot of times they don't. I mean, I look at my mother and I are estranged. She wants nothing to do with me because, you know, she's in the position of, if she has anything to do with me, you know, she thinks her husband will cut her off of, you know, everything. And they have this ginormous house they don't need, but it looks fancy and impressive to everybody. And they drive fancy cars and, you know, shop at expensive stores. Right. And she wants that life, and she's willing to submit to whatever she needs to do to keep it. And some people just are, and there's nothing you can do. And so, it's the same with the narcissists.
I have to ask you, what did day one of Dana taking the first step for herself look like? Because that I think a lot of people will go, okay, you chose, but what did day one look like of your new you?
I'm actually getting chills right now because it was weird. And thank you for asking, because nobody's ever asked me that. I had been bound to certain rules. There were like unspoken rules. You know, I knew how to navigate life with him. So even though he wasn't there, I hate to say it, I almost didn't know what to do with myself. Like, I was lost. Even opening the refrigerator to decide what to make for dinner, I always had to have dinner, had to have a meat and two sides, but I couldn't have the same meat on two consecutive nights or a similar, like I couldn't have grilled chicken one night and grilled pork chops on another. Like, there was, this is how... This is how much my life was I mean, everything was so set and required so much thought, but I didn't know how to unlearn all that. And I don't even remember what I was doing. And I remember my son, who was 17 at the time, he kind of glanced over. He said, "Mom, we don't have to do that anymore." And I was like, Oh, wow. You're right. So I'm not going to lie, it took time. It took a year or two, honestly, to kind of rid myself or let's say give myself the permission not to follow the rules anymore. You know, there were some bolder things that I did, like, you know, I'd get a little, you know, sometimes you hear a song, you know, you're playing your Amazon Echo or whatever, and you hear a song and you're like, oh yeah. And you're feeling all badass and stuff. So it's like, she told me I look like a whore in that lipstick, but guess what? I'm going to wear that lipstick today. But then there's other times where I was like lost, because I'm like, I hate to say it. I hate to say this out loud, but there were times I missed him because I just didn't know. I didn't know how to live without him, because he never gave me the option of living on my terms. It was always on his terms, but I shook that off. It went away. Yeah.
It takes time though. I mean, that's what I think
a lot of time.
And I have to ask you, what'd you have for dinner the first night?
Honestly, it was a pint of ice cream.
Hell yeah. That's what I'm talking about, Dana. With it. That's what I'm talking about, Dana. That's what I needed to hear. Pint of ice cream.
It was really good.
I love that. I love that. That's your next book, A Pint of Ice Cream.
Right? That's an amazing title.
I love it. Well, Dana, it has been such a pleasure. Go to danasdiaz.com. You can find out more about her, have her come and speak, as well as Gasping for Air. You are a thriver. Your message is very well received, and I love that you are able to speak about this, because it takes courage to do that. So I appreciate you coming on today, Dana.
Thank you so much for having me. I really do appreciate it. And thanks for having a laugh with me too, because this is dark stuff, but we got to laugh sometimes too.
We do, but you know what? You're not done. I got three questions for you. I always do this. I know. I always right. And that's not, did you have ice cream? If you could go back to your 18-year-old self and give yourself one piece of advice, what would that be?
Oh, there's a few things.
Yeah.
I would just tell her it's going to be okay, because I'm a firm believer that as much as I didn't want to live my first part of my life the way I did, I think that if I changed it, I wouldn't be who I am, and I wouldn't be living the life I'm living now. So I think I needed to go through what I needed to go through to get where I am. So I would just reassure her it's going to be okay.
Love that. Love that. All right. The second one, everybody's going through challenges and struggles in their life. If you could give them two habits to incorporate into their daily life, to continue to push forward, to continue to live forward, what would those two things be?
I would say one, always have something to look forward to, whether it's something every day. Maybe it's just like watching a certain show every night on Netflix or whatever, or if it's a trip that you are planning, just always have something to look forward to, because you need something positive in your life coming, you know, in your future. The other thing, I'm really big on self-care, but by self-care, it is kind of the pint of ice cream stuff.
Yeah,
just make sure you fill your happy jar every single day. And it doesn't have to be, I mean, do we want to go to a spa in Arizona? Of course, let's go on a retreat, all of us. But, you know, in the meantime, what you can do daily for yourself without interrupting or disrupting life is, yeah, indulge it. If you want to, you know, paint your nails a certain color, just paint them. Let them be, you know, you'll look at them and be happy. You want to have the pint of ice cream for dinner? Lord, just have it. You want to skip your workout for the day? Give yourself a break, but just take care of you, because you'll be a lot better for it in the rest of your life.
I love that. All right. This last one's fun. If you could have coffee at a firehouse table with three individuals, they can be deceased or alive. And at a firehouse table, anything can be said and will be, you know, you can ask any question. Who would those three people be and why?
Okay, this is going to sound really dumb, but I'm like a 47-year-old Swiftie, so I'm sorry, but Taylor Swift, that girl is so artistic. I'm going to defend her lyrics are just, is a master at her craft. So, and she's got to bring her guitar. We'll sing a few songs, although you don't want to hear me sing. But yes, I have to meet Taylor Swift. And if she's listening, please, Taylor, I have not been on the Eras tour. I need to come to one of these shows.
I love it.
Aside from that, gosh, there's so many people. Gosh, I don't even know. Like, that's a loaded question.
It is a very loaded question. That's why I leave it for the last one.
Yeah, I know, but I feel like I need a day to think on this, because
you have a day.
You're like the genie, you know, you have three wishes to grant and I got to come up with them on the spot. Okay, I'm going to say Matt Rife, the comedian. I'm sorry. I know these are not like, I know probably other people say like they want to meet Gandhi and whatever. I'm not there. But Matt Rife, because that dude is so funny, and laughing is just such a magical thing. It like cures everything. And he's so witty and quick. And we did go to Vegas back in September to see one of his shows. He was, you know, he's been touring, and yes, he would have to be there. And maybe I could set up him and Taylor just in case she, you know, breaks doesn't up like with Kelsey that other guy. Yeah, exactly. I mean, we all know it might come to an end sooner or later.
Right.
Who else? Who would I add to this?
Who is the end of the trifecta?
No, who is the end of the trifecta? You know what? I would say one of my best friends, Kyle. He is just, he's like my ride or die, but he is so witty and funny. And he's like that one person, aside from my husband, of course, but like that doesn't judge and just rolls with all my craziness in life. So I couldn't do this without him. So me and Kyle with Taylor Swift and Matt Rife. So if Matt and Taylor are game, it would be a good time, dude. Let me tell you.
I love it. I love it. Well, Dana, it's been honored. Go to DanaSDiaz.com. Find out more. You are an amazing individual, and I appreciate your time today.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for listening and supporting the Forged in the Fires podcast with Fireman Rob. Remember, don't forget to like and subscribe to this podcast. And please share this episode with a friend or family member. To find out more about Fireman Rob, or if you have a question, go to www.firemanrob.com. Until next time, live your life forged in the fires.